This week on Behind the Lens, a New Orleans tourism promoter takes aim as City Hall looks to move tourism tax revenue to infrastructure needs.
The argument is, all right, from a high-performing, organically created private sector enterprise, we want to give it to the people who have been managing the sewage and water board, who've been the stewards of everything from flooding and drainage management.
Stephen Perry talks with the Lens. Charles Maldonado does a fact check. Also, a tiny school tries to meet a huge need, educating the city's most traumatized children. I'm Tom Wright, and you're listening to Behind the Lens, a podcast by the Lens.
Brought to you by Community Support. Learn more at support.thelensnola.org.
The City of New Orleans says it wants a bigger cut from tax revenue linked to tourism, but a top industry cheerleader is fighting mad about that proposal from Mayor LaToya Cantrell. Lens editor Charles Maldonado interviewed Stephen Perry, head of New Orleans & Company.
Well, New Orleans & Company used to be known as the New Orleans Metropolitan Convention and Visitors Bureau, which means it's the main sort of tourism marketing body in the city. You know, it's a private nonprofit, but it is the primary body that does the business of generating tourism to the city.
What was the subject of your conversation?
Well, this all came about because there has been for the past few months kind of a fight brewing between Mayor LaToya Cantrell and the tourism industry over how taxes generated from tourism are apportioned. Now we have things like a hotel tax, which is in total about 15%. Only a very small portion of that tax comes back to the city. One and a half cents out of that 15 cents per dollar comes back to the city's general fund. Mayor Cantrell is faced with these, you know, major infrastructure needs. You know, that's kind of the big issue.
We're looking at sewage and water issues, certainly, potholes in the street.
Right, right. And she is saying that the city has this need of between $80 million and $100 million a year, primarily to deal with infrastructure needs. The tourism industry, you know, in the middle of this fight has made an offer of, you know, floating a new half penny tax to that would go directly to the city. Mayor Cantrell has said that is inadequate for the city's needs. What she wants to see is larger portions of these tourism taxes that are already on the books come back to the city, which would require legislative action and sign off from the governor. And thus far, the indication is that the legislature and the governor are not eager to do this. So Mayor Cantrell has kept pressure on. She's formed she has a political action committee called Action New Orleans that's sort of lobbying the public directly on these issues. So in the middle of all of this, data center, formerly the Greater New Orleans Data Center, released a report that questioned some of the tourism industry's claims about its impact on the economy, notably the number of tourism jobs in the city, which the New Orleans & Company has claimed is over 100,000. Data center said they could not find a source to justify that number. So that was one of the questions that I went to talk to him about, as well as a claim on the New Orleans & Company website about how much of the city's budget is generated by
tourism. Yeah, let's listen to that ad.
We blow the horn for New Orleans around the globe, attracting conventions, events, and travelers that generate a full 43% of the city's operating budget. That's dollars paid by out-of-town visitors, funding nearly half of our essential services, like law enforcement, education, and sanitation, as well as the infrastructure projects that keep New Orleans moving forward.
Here is part of your exchange with Stephen Perry, the president of New Orleans & Company, the tourism marketing firm.
We provide at least 43%
Jim Richardson says without correlation, he can only come up with 40, but it could be more. And I'm going, you asked where I got the figure about the percentage of the sales tax?
Yes.
So that figure was given to me 3.5-4 years ago by Andy Copeland, sitting as CAO, on what was provided to him by the city finance department. And he came in regard to a question when I called him, and they were talking about, we need all this money. And I said, Andy, where'd you get the $20 million for the police pay raise? Mm-hmm. And he said, he starts laughing, and he goes, well, we're up that much alone in tourism revenues this year. And I said, what do you mean? And because we knew it, but I wanted him to say it. And he said, because we're calculating right now 43% of our sales tax is coming from visitors.
What are you finding in your research, Charles, about his claim there regarding that proportion of sales tax?
Well, I can't find it. Basically, they have this number that's 43% of the overall city budget. Now, in talking to Perry, as you just heard, this number seems to come from a conversation of over the phone that he had with former Deputy Mayor Andy Copeland 3 or 4 years ago, where the problem is the claim is that it's 43% of the overall city budget. Now, that number would be about $300 million. In fact, what Andy Copeland said to Mr. Perry, according to Mr. Perry, is that it's 43% of sales taxes. Sales taxes are only a portion of the city budget. So now we're talking about something more like $80 million instead of $300 million. Now, even that, I haven't been able to find. I went to the Cantrell administration to ask them if any such analysis has ever been performed. They haven't gotten back to me. I tried to contact Mr. Copeland, who now works for the Greater New Orleans Foundation, about this. He hasn't gotten back to me. So all I have really is, Mr. Perry's word about a phone conversation that happened 3 or 4 years ago. Now, the other portion of this in this interview, they pointed to a study from the city from 2013 called the Cultural Snapshot, where they claimed this number shows up, 43-44% of the city budget. I did find that study, and it doesn't say what they're telling me it says. It actually says that 44% of the city budget is generated by cultural businesses, not specifically taxes paid by tourists.
Okay.
So cultural businesses could include a lot of things. It includes all the restaurants in the city. It includes, even things like journalists. So I'm not finding a source for this.
Okay. You also discussed the number of jobs that New Orleans and Company claim can be directly attributed to tourism. Here's another section from that video.
New Orleans and Company is also the 100,000 people directly employed by tourism and hospitality in New Orleans. From every street, every neighborhood, and every background, from GED to MBA.
So this 100,000 jobs figure, this was the data center. They specifically pointed to this claim in their recent report, and they said they couldn't find a source for it. I looked into it, and I was unable to reproduce this number from independent sources. The closest that you get from sources that are outside of the Convention and Visitors Bureau's own economic analyses, which they haven't released, is the Bureau of Labor Statistics, which is a federal government agency, they calculate 89,000 jobs in the New Orleans metro area, not just the city, the metro area, related to hospitality and leisure. Now, the problem with this number, and the data center touched on this in their report as well, is that it includes a lot of jobs that may or may not ever touch tourism. This includes, like, the biggest number is, again, every restaurant worker in the city, including fast food restaurant workers.
McDonald's, yeah. Contributing to the tourism job economy, it may be debatable. It would seem if that's where we're going with this figure.
To be fair to Mr. Perry and New Orleans and Company, following this interview where I pushed back on this number a bit, they did change some of the language on their website, though the video with the same claim is still up. But in the text portion of the website, they did change it and cited the source as being the Bureau of Labor Statistics. So they downgraded it from over 100,000 to 89,000 on their website.
Let's get into the meat of the current debate on redirecting some of that hotel tax revenue.
So we talked we got into what the mayor's talking about. We talked about, you know, what if some of this were redirected, and you know, what could be redirected. So there's a bunch of different portions of, you know, let's just take the hotel tax. There's a bunch of different portions. There's a portion 4% that goes to the Superdome. There's a portion 3% that goes to the convention center. There are additional portions that go to the state general fund, but that a lot of that is rerouted to the tourism industry. On top of all of that, the Convention Visitors Bureau over the past few years has also created what's called a hotel assessment, which, if you know, to them it's not a tax. If you're staying in a hotel, it certainly looks like a tax. It's an additional 1.75% fee on your hotel bill that goes directly to the Convention and Visitors Bureau and is ultimately shared between them, the New Orleans Tourism Marketing Corporation, which is yet another tourism marketing agency in the city.
We seem to have plenty.
Yes. And then a smaller portion under recent agreements goes to the city to help pay for things like French Quarter police patrols and French Quarter infrastructure repairs. So again, you know, we have another piece going to the city here, but it is largely focused in the tourism areas.
Okay.
So I asked about that a little bit, and Steve Perry made the argument that the city has, you know, mismanaged its money compared to the tourism industry, which is adding so much to the city's economy.
Okay, let's hear some of that.
Isn't that assessment by itself producing more revenue than this agency previously had altogether?
That was the whole point of it.
Right. So I guess if I were the mayor, I might say, why aren't the tourism marketing agencies living off that tax? I mean, why not just rely primarily on that tax and not rededicate a portion of the hotel tax into the city general fund?
Well, if you are a socialist and you believe, and I'm a leftist, by the way.
Okay.
But if you are a good socialist, mm-hmm. you would believe that trying to plan the economy instead of using organic economic growth, that if you believe in, and I'll give you a difference. Since the time of getting that assessment,
mm-hmm.
and be able to incur, by the way, that does things like, that's the cash incentives for Super Bowl,
right.
The cash incentives for Final Four, which the city says they don't have.
Mm-hmm.
It's the national marketing of NOTMC for the leisure industry. It goes on and on.
Mm-hmm.
It's the thing that underwrites the British Airways flight. You know, we do so many things. And by the way, nearly 30% of our assessment goes to paying for city services that the city is miserably unwilling to provide,
mm-hmm.
in terms of infrastructure repair and
security.
The NOPD. State police.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
So here's the difference. So in this run over the last, let me say it more clearly and frame it this way. We believe our city has a serious management and spending problem, not a revenue problem.
Steve Perry makes the point here that about $200 million has been added to the budget since the beginning of the Landrieu administration, the city budget. And he attributes, in this conversation, he seems to attribute all of that to tourism. Now, there's no question, right, that that the tourism economy is very healthy and that tourism taxes have grown significantly. But to put this entire increase on the tourism industry, I think, is a major oversimplification. You know, we're talking about tax growth in every type of tax that has contributed to this over the last 10 years or so. This includes, you know, property taxes. Now, to be fair to Stephen Perry and New Orleans and Company, some of the biggest property taxpayers in the city are hotels. But we have also seen citywide residential property tax increases on a major scale over the past 10 years. And we've added certain new property taxes. You know, including the fire department tax that isn't subject to the homestead exemption. So it's assessed against the full value of your property. So again, to say that all of this $200 million came from tourism is an oversimplification. As part of this, they also pointed me to a report on tourism by the UNO Hospitality Research Center, which we've covered recently in a story by Michael Isaacstein, kind of questioning their methodology in producing economic impact reports. But that report says that about $220 million in local sales taxes in Orleans Parish are taxes directly paid by tourists. Now, I'm not sure how they're calculating that number, but $220 million is approximately 100% of all sales taxes collected in Orleans Parish, according to the city budget. So if this is true, if what UNO and what New Orleans Company is telling me is true based on this report, 100% of sales taxes are paid only by tourists and residents don't pay any sales taxes at all, which I find unlikely.
Yeah, right. We're having a lot of fun with the numbers in this, but Mr. Perry had some strong words for the folks at City Hall in this interview.
And so for us, we sit and look at this, and we're truly incredulous, because the argument is, all right, from a high-performing, organically created private sector enterprise, we want to give it to the people who have been managing the sewage and water board, mm-hmm. who've been the stewards of everything from flooding and drainage management, who've given us the modern day NOPD, and I just go on and on. I mean, it's life to us. And here at the end of the day for us, and we're trying not to embarrass anybody right now, but we're about to have to start doing that. Because take the French Quarter. Uh-huh. You've got a city that takes a 13-by-8 block area that's arguably the single most valuable neighborhood commercially in the entire United States. They can't clean it. They can't pick up the garbage. They can't make it safe. 13-by-8 blocks.
Sure.
And so you can understand our skepticism about saying, all right, let's diminish the size of the economy and give a little more to them to continue performing so badly. The reality is there is no respect being given to the industry that drives most of the revenue here that keeps people from having to pay higher taxes.
So, you know, as you can see here, Steve Perry seems to be very ready for a fight with City Hall on this issue.
And he had a little something to say about the news media as well.
Yeah, this is. I had a bit of pushback in my response to this, but he's saying that the news media over the past couple months, since Mayor Cantrell has been pushing this issue, has just been spoon-fed by City Hall.
What I see right now that's occurring is that it's the first time in my life that I've seen the news media and really good investigative reporters led by the nose by a city government that is lying directly to them. And I'm staggered by that. Absolutely staggered. Mm-hmm. Because there's a belief that if the city says it, it's true. When the city is one of the least efficient, most
information twisting entities we've ever seen.
To my perspective, and I got into this a bit with him, and he eventually actually agreed with me, conceded my point, look, there's an argument happening. A lot of this argument is based on claims from the tourism industry. It's our responsibility to check those claims, because this is now a public policy debate. And certainly we are not being spoon-fed by City Hall on this issue. I'm looking at claims that are being made by New Orleans and Company that cite absolutely no sources. I try to follow up. I don't get complete answers. At a certain point in this interview, I request a copy of an economic impact report that the CVB commissioned a few years ago, that they keep referencing in the interview. They refuse to give me a copy of the report. I think all I'm trying to do and all others are trying to do, and I know we're not the only ones looking at this stuff, is understand where their numbers come from.
You did get at least a little bit of a concession from Mr. Perry in terms of a new economic impact report?
Yeah, at the very end of the interview, he and some of the other people in the room that I was talking to did eventually concede that, you know, perhaps we haven't been great about trying. The language they used was perhaps we haven't been as good at telling our story as we should be, which translates to maybe we haven't given the type of specifics that we should be giving here. And maybe we haven't broken out these jobs numbers enough so people know what they mean. And now they're saying they're going to commission a new economic impact report. They're going to seek input from the media about what should be in there, how granular the data should be. When we say 100,000 jobs, you know, should we know what those jobs are? So we can at least have an argument about whether those jobs are actually tourism-related jobs or not. So that's what they say they're going to do. And I guess we'll find out in the coming year if that happens.
Charles Maldonado, editor at The Lens, thank you very much for a great interview on this critically important current topic.
Thank you very much, Tom.
In a city like New Orleans, with high levels of poverty and violence, it should come as no surprise that children are often the hardest hit victims. That makes for an especially tough job for teachers tasked with educating these kids. Lens writer Marta Jusen reports on a school that's focused on helping those children in particular.
The Center for Resilience was created in 2014, or that's when it was started, and opened to its first students in 2015 after spending a year designing its curriculum. But what Director Liz Marcil told us when we sat down last month was that the city was really seeing a huge gap, a big need for services for students with behavioral health needs.
You include in your reporting here some staggering data from a survey of New Orleans children.
Yeah, in a 2015 survey from kids ages 10 to 16, they found that nearly 40% of those students had witnessed domestic violence, a shooting, a stabbing, or a beating. And about 18% had reported witnessing a murder. And more than half said they lost someone close to them.
That is astounding to me, and I'm sure it's going to be cause for concern for a lot of our listeners. What does this school do to address the needs of some of these traumatized children in this setting?
The Center for Resilience really focuses on bringing together both the academic and kind of the medical interventions that these students need. So that's everything from one-on-one lessons to sitting down with a psychiatrist to a psychiatrist who plays basketball with you sometimes.
Right. You discuss a bit in this article as well some of the home base strategy.
Liz Marcel, the director there, told us that in previous years they had had students passing from class like a normal school, and what they found was that was leading to a lot of power struggles. What they tried this year is instead every student basically has a homeroom, and that's their base throughout the day. They have breakfast there, they start the day there, and then they essentially opt in to go to all of their classes. Marcel said that really has lowered interventions needed or adult response to kind of help kids along throughout the day.
You have some sound from that interview with the center's director, Liz Marcel Williams. Let's hear some of that.
There's usually an array of services, or what they call a continuum of care, that exists between a school building and a psychiatric hospital. Mm-hmm. And so there are different types of programs with different levels of intensity designed for different profiles of kids who have emotional health needs. If you look at the state of Connecticut, they have something like 17 different options in that space between hospitalization and school. Mm-hmm. The state of Louisiana has none. And so by being the single day treatment program in the state, we knew that we would be fielding referrals for a whole diverse group of kids. But so we tried to pull from elements of more medical and clinical programs that are serving kids with more intense needs, as well as some therapeutic school models, so that we weren't going too medical. And it's been an iterative process in terms of figuring out exactly what serves the most number of kids who get referred to us.
Marcel's hoping to expand to high school grades in the near future. I know that I believe they're looking to hire a director now for those grades, so I think they're hoping on expanding pretty soon. She said it's also one of her dreams to have a trauma-informed early childhood education setting, so I think they want to expand both to younger and older students.
Would you explain some of the how this center is supported financially, for one thing?
Yeah, so it was opened under the Recovery School District and transferred over to the Orleans Parish School Board, but now is actually a nonprofit center. It's funded both by some local grant funding, and then school. When students attend this school, they actually stay enrolled in their other elementary school, and those schools essentially forward some of their tuition to this school, and that's how they're able to afford, you know, this one-on-one level of care.
And I want to be clear, what's the goal for these students? What do these educators ultimately hope to accomplish with some of these deeply traumatized children who they serve here?
Liz says far and away their absolute goal is to get these kids back into their home classrooms.
All right. Marta Jusen reporting for The Lens on the Education Beat. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Closing out the podcast, we want to thank all of our supporters for your help in 2018. We're proud to say we exceeded our $50,000 year-end fundraising goal. And as 2019 gets underway, we remind you that readers and listeners like you make this public interest nonprofit news site possible. Show your support this year. Go online to support.thelensnola.org. I'm Tom Wright. Thank you very much for getting behind the lens.